So as he mentioned, I'm Catherine Raspberry. I'm a health scientist in the Division of Adolescent and School Health at CDC. And I'm going to present today on behalf of a couple of my co-authors and talk with you about creating safe and supportive school environments for sexual and gender minority youth. So I have a few objectives for us today. The first is that by the end of the session, I want you to be able to describe why safe and supportive school environments are so important for STD prevention work with LGBTQ youth. I also want you to be able to describe what these students report about key characteristics of their school environment and experiences. And finally, I want you to be able to identify some strategies that can be used to improve the school environment for these students and allow us to better reach them with STD prevention activities. So let's start sort of at the basics here. Why does school matter? So we're here at an STD prevention conference. We're obviously all focused on HIV and STD prevention. And schools are an important place for us. They matter because they reach a lot of youth, more than 55 million students a year. But they also are a place where we teach really critical health information, specifically through health education. And hopefully we're including sequenced and developmentally appropriate sexual health education as part of that. We work to make sure that schools can do that. Schools are also a place where students can build trusted relationships with adults. And this is important for a number of reasons, but one of those is that those adults can help connect youth to resources and services that they need. And finally, schools are a place where we can do a lot of public health work, right? We have an audience there, we have trusted adults, and we really have sort of an infrastructure that allows us to do public health work. I think it's important also to point out that the characteristics of the school environment can impact the youth directly. It impacts their ability to learn as well as our ability to connect with them. So I want to frame this for you in terms of the way our division thinks about HIV and STD prevention in schools. So here you see we have sort of three tiers of work. At the bottom level of this, we have work for all students. Typically, we focus a lot on sexual health education as something that reaches all students in schools. Then for sexually active students, we have slightly more tailored work. We have a heavy focus on sexual health services and increasing access to those services for sexually active youth, although they also matter for youth who aren't sexually active. And finally, at the top of this, we can do more focused, targeted programs for youth who are at disproportionate risk, which includes our LGBTQ youth. But all of these things are situated in the context of the school environment, and whether or not it's safe and supportive for our youth makes a big difference in how impactful we can be. So let's look at what that environment is like. What do the students themselves tell us about their environment and experiences at school? So I want to share data with you today from three different sources. We're going to look very quickly at National Youth Risk Behavior Survey data that's recent, our most recent data, some data from Broward County Public Schools, and then we're going to spend a little more time on some qualitative data that we collected a couple of years ago, specifically from adolescent sexual minority males. So if you were paying attention last month, you saw that CDC released 2015 YRBS data that for the first time gave us a national estimate of how many lesbian, gay, and bisexual high school students are in this country. So there, it turns out from this data that we have about 8% of high school students identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual. So the data I'm showing you here compare our LGB students to heterosexual students. All of these differences are statistically significant. And again, LGB, so that's based on their identity, not behavior or some other measure. So here we see that our LGB students are more likely to have been threatened or injured with a weapon at school, in a physical fight at school, not gone to school because of safety concerns specifically, or report being bullying. And this is at the national level. Now, this data is from some work that we've done in Broward County Public Schools, which is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where they're doing some HIV prevention work specifically in seven of their high schools. So this data is a census of students in seven high schools. We have more than 11,000 students represented here. And we wanted to look specifically at some of the environment-related pieces for sexual minority youth. Now, my language changed here because the way I'm defining this group has also shifted. In this data, when I say sexual minority youth, I'm referring to youth who either identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, but also youth who report same-sex sexual behavior or same-sex attraction. So any one of those things would have landed a person in that classification. And once again, you see the differences here between sexual minority youth and non-sexual minority youth. All of these are statistically significant differences. You see things related to safety show up here, but I want to point out a couple of things in particular. Down at the bottom of this list, you see that our sexual minority students were more likely to report that they have heard other students make homophobic remarks. But even when you look at non-sexual minority students, 80% of those students heard that as well. You also saw that sexual minority students were more likely to report hearing homophobic remarks from teachers or school staff, with more than a quarter of them saying that they had heard that. So in the next section here, I want to look specifically at some qualitative data. Now, these data were collected when we were doing some early work trying to figure out what type of programming would work well in our schools. They were collected from 13 to 19-year-old adolescent sexual minority males in three cities, so Philadelphia, New York, and San Francisco. We did interviews with 32 youth. Those were pretty evenly spread across the three cities. So I want to share some of the things we learned from them about their school environments. So we saw that the youth we interviewed did describe a number of negative experiences. They talked about being bullied, witnessing assault, and feeling unsafe in certain places. Specifically, they talked about areas right outside of the school where staff weren't present, or certain hallways or areas within the school where maybe there weren't cameras or staff weren't regularly stationed. They talked also about ways that adults in particular had a negative impact on the environment. So they talked about adults not addressing undesirable student behavior or not stepping in when students were experiencing teasing and bullying. But they also talked about the adults themselves being heard making abusive comments or slurs about other LGBT people. So I think that aligns with sort of what we saw in the Brower data, that it's not just the other students that sometimes are impacting the school environment in a negative way. So this young man from San Francisco refers to a time that the teacher in his class says, "So when are all the gay guys going to vanish off the face of the earth?" I mean, you can imagine that would be pretty jarring to hear from your teacher. But the youth also had some more positive things to say, and they talked about characteristics of schools that really made the environments better, one being supportive peers. So some students talked about things like membership in a team. Like one young man talked about being on the football team and how building relationships with those other students was very helpful. We heard students talk about GSAs and other social support groups within the schools as being protective. They also talked specifically about school staff members, including LGBT staff members, who would intervene and support students. So this young man from San Francisco is talking about his English teacher, and he says he was awesome. He was the main person who actually taught about LGBT history in the school. He went on to say, "I remember when I came out to him, it's this sense of empathy and understanding that made it different from other people." So across the data collection that we did, again, 32 youth, almost all of them, the vast majority, were able to pick out at least one adult in the school that they felt comfortable talking to about sensitive issues such as safety, sexual orientation, relationships, or sexual health. And when they talked about the staff members they were most likely to talk to, they highlighted a few different characteristics. I'll highlight a couple here. One is that they could be trusted to maintain confidentiality. This was huge for youth. We heard it over and over and over from multiple students. They also wanted adults who were willing and able to take action, right? They talked about a variety of staff and a variety of roles, everybody from a teacher to the principal to the security officer to the cafeteria worker. I mean, we heard every type of role listed. But we heard a lot about principals and assistant principals because they were in a position to do something about a problem. And when they did, that really built a lot of trust. This young man from New York talks about a bullying incident, and he says, "It kind of got me a little bit more comfortable with my counselor for the fact of, like, he was, like, so behind me and didn't like the fact that this was going on." But the participants also told us why they would be less likely to talk to certain adults. Again, I have a few listed, and I'll highlight just a couple. One, again, is related to confidentiality. And I think an important point here is that youth didn't just want staff who they thought would try to keep their information confidential. They were really worried about unintentional breaches of confidentiality. So what if I mention to you that I'm gay and that we're talking about LGBT issues and you look right at me in class? So they were really thinking about, even if you're not trying to break confidentiality, what if something happens, right? They also talked about not being comfortable with people that they knew were not supportive of LGBT youth, or even if they were just uncertain how you felt about LGBT youth, it made them less likely to approach that staff member. So given what we know about the environment, what can we do about it? So I want to share some examples with you today that are from the work that our funded partners do to improve the school environment for LGBTQ youth. And I use this as sort of a framework to think about tiers of our work in this area. At the bottom, we have safe and bullying-free environments. When we talk about safe and supportive, this is the safe. It is the minimum, and I would say the expectation is that every student who walks through your door should be safe in that school, right, and on the school grounds. It is really the least you can do to keep your kids safe. That's the foundation, and it's important, and we still have work to do in that area. The next tier up here is visible allies and LGBT inclusion. I think about this as the supportive aspect of the environment. And at the top, we have more specific and tailored activities that can truly be designed to reach our LGBT youth. I think about that as sort of like where the rubber hits the road, particularly for STD prevention. Really allows us to go more in depth. So let's look at some examples. Again, thinking about that bottom level, the safe environment. When we talk about prohibiting bullying and harassment, we're talking about promoting, implementing, and monitoring anti-bullying, anti-harassment policies, sometimes implementing bullying prevention programs. And I want to share this example from Broward County Public Schools, where they developed an LGBTQ critical support guide for their school staff. So this is a document both in hard copy and available at the link at the bottom of these slides, that is for the school staff and administrators, that has statistics on sort of why we need to pay attention to this group's health and school environment. It has terminology. So what does cisgender mean? What does heteronormative mean? So it introduces these terms. Policies and laws, talks about the policies and laws for the state and also for their specific district. Strategies to improve the environment and responses to concerns. Two things I love about this guide. One is that this is their way of saying to staff, when you stand up for an LGBT student, our school district is standing behind you. That was very important to their staff. They said a lot of times staff wanted to step in and they didn't know if they would be supported. Now they know. The second thing that I love about this is it gives really concrete examples. So they have a section that says, what do you do if you're teaching and you hear a student say, that's so gay? It gives specific responses the teacher can give in that moment. So sort of bridging this space between the safe environment and creating some visible allies, we have a number of programs that are really about creating safe spaces and highlighting safe people. So on the right-hand side here, you see a poster from GLSEN. This is part of their Safe Spaces campaign. We have a number of partners who use that campaign. I think HRC also has like a Welcoming Schools campaign. There are a number of existing campaigns out there. And like I said, many of our partners use these materials. In LA, they have, and several other sites now actually, they have these Out for Safe Schools campaigns. So the Genders and Sexualities Alliance Network is now helping promote this in other school districts across the country. In LA specifically, they use posters, stickers, badges for staff, and even like whistles for coaches to help create visible allies in the school setting. And in that district, they actually tie them to staff training. So you can't just come pick up a badge. You actually have to go through some training, and they have to feel, you know, pretty confident that you truly are going to be a good ally. Gay Straight Alliances. So the Genders and Sexualities Alliance Network also does a lot of work on this. They are one of our funded partners, and they're helping support implementation of GSAs across the country. These are student-led, school-based clubs that can provide social support and connection for LGBTQ youth. We actually heard about GSA some in some of our data collection as being helpful. And the activities that they implement can also help shift the school environment. And there is some research that shows that simply the presence of a GSA can make a difference in the environment, and membership in a GSA can have benefits for students involved. Another piece of this work is LGBT inclusive course content. Now, this really stretches across the curriculum at all age levels and in all content areas. This is an example of the website from San Francisco Unified School District. They do a really nice job of this work in their district. And here you see some photos they have of children's books. So on this particular web page, they have sample lesson plans for teachers of elementary age kids, even pre-K and kindergarten, who can incorporate discussions of images of families that are varied, right? So they really work to do this in across all their course content. Certainly, it is particularly important for our sexual health education. It is critical to make sure that our LGBT students feel that they are receiving messages that are relevant to them and that they see people like them reflected throughout the course content. Now, as we get to that very top tier of the pyramid, again, that's where we can do some more tailored work to make sure that our HIV and STD prevention activities are really going to reach LGBT youth. And one of the pieces of work that we do in our division is we support the use of school staff referrals for STD prevention testing and treatment. And this is based on the Project Connect model that came out of the Division of STD Prevention, and Patty Dittus and others who are in the room today. And one of the pieces of this work involved the creation of resource guides that could be used in some cases directly by students, but in most cases they're used by school staff, who can look through, and if they're meeting with a student who has a particular need, they can go through and actually help the student make their way to a clinic that's going to provide appropriate, competent care for them. So in the creation of these resource guides, part of what we can do for our LGBT youth is make sure that we're thinking about their specialized needs. And as part of adding people to the guide, they find out if that particular clinic happens to be LGBT friendly. Is it part of an LGBT serving organization? So that we can make sure that our students get to locations and service providers that are going to provide services to them in a comfortable and affirming way. So, in conclusion, I hope that I've at least mostly convinced you that school environments are really important considerations for STD prevention. We do know that our LGBT youth are disproportionately reporting negative experiences related to their school environment. But we also know that there are things we can do to make that better. Many of the school districts that we fund and other school districts across the country are working really hard to make sure that they create better spaces for these youth and can better serve them, and also that they do those in ways that can facilitate our ability to reach them with STD prevention activities. But we still need to learn more. We need to learn more about both direct and indirect relationships between the school environment and sexual health outcomes, and we still need to learn more about these youth. I think it's really important to highlight that all the data I showed you, let's see, we had data on LGBT youth, on sexual minority youth, which was slightly more expansive, specifically on sexual minority males. I didn't present any data on transgender youth. Now, there were transgender youth in some of those samples, but I didn't have a statement to say specifically about them, and that's a problem, right? So we have a lot more that we can learn about those youth so that we can better design our activities to reach them and make sure that they too are included in these safe and supportive ways. So that's a lot of the work that we're doing in our division. I hope that you will join us in this work in your own communities and really push for making these spaces safe for all of our youth.